Hi everyone, it's Dan Hawes from the Graduate Recruiters Network. Welcome to today's webinar as part of the Fresh Insights series. First of all, you'll be delighted to know you're joined by several other people from the world of early talent, early careers, graduate recruitment, student recruitment. So you're certainly in the right place. I like to put up a word cloud here of all the job titles, of all the bookings we've had, which number over 100, and you're all involved with early talent. So we're delighted that you've spent some time filling in the registration form, putting in a few questions there as well, which we'll put to our speaker at the very end. If you do have any other questions throughout, please use the chat facility, and we'll take a note of those as we progress. So yeah, this is designed for early talent, early career leads, HR advisors, HRBPs, recruitment managers, directors, at that kind of level, to discuss current topics. We invite a variety of different speakers throughout our webinar series to talk about hot topics that are affecting the world of early talent recruitment. So GRN, Graduate Recruiters Network, was set up in January 2009, so it's been going for some time. We've now reached a membership of over 3,585 members. About 35 have joined us since I last spoke to you. So welcome to some of our new members who are with us in the room today. We have a nice mixture of different organisations represented from all over the UK, from the very largest FTSE 100 firms, Fortune 500 firms, but also some fast-growing companies from different sectors. So a nice representation in the room. As I say, we've had over 100 bookings, so we're delighted that you're all spending your lunch hour with us today to hear our speaker. So as members, we do email you from time to time with invites to these webinars, special in-person events. We run a few social engagements throughout the year. We also have lots of activity on the LinkedIn forum, so if you're not already, please do join the Graduate Recruiters Network LinkedIn group. We also have updates on our website with new blogs that we add from time to time, a survey, and also a monthly newsletter, which the second one went out on Thursday. So hopefully that's landed in your inbox and you found that very, very useful. So there's a quick overview for some of our new members joining us today on the Graduate Recruiters Network. Okay, so if you don't know who I am, my name is Dan Hawes, and I'm a business graduate from Brighton University who co-founded the recruitment agency GRB, or Graduate Recruitment Bureau, over 25 years ago. We've now grown to a team of 80 people, and we're considered the go-to organisation for high-calibre university students, recent graduates, alumni and employers. We've partnered over 2,000 clients across all sectors, companies as big as Amazon, IBM, Unilever and Ocado, and also several fast-growing SMEs who either need graduates throughout the year or who use us for their recruitment process outsourcing. We've successfully matched over 8,000 graduates with full-time graduate or executive level jobs. So there's a little intro from me. Hopefully I'll get to meet you in person at some of our future events and maybe at other events that take place throughout the year that are involved with early talent and early careers. And we'd like to share details of these events where possible. Hopefully we'll get to meet you face to face. Right, so today we're gonna be talking about youth, or the 18 to 24 year old age bracket, or more generally known as Gen Z. Now, I went and on the internet, had a look at some of the subjects that have been covered recently on Gen Z. And there's a few examples here from the Financial Times, People Management Magazine, HR Magazine. So, you know, it is a hot topic. It is an issue that many early talent recruiters are struggling with. I mean, there's going to be 500,000 graduate entering the job market next summer. We can't hope to generalize that audience. They're a very mixed bunch of individuals from very diverse backgrounds, and it can be a constantly moving target for early talent recruiters to try and pin down exactly what makes them tick. Now, I don't know if any of you are Gen Z generation yourself, but for the very first time, we now have five generations in the workplace. So, you know, there's going to be differences. We're all a product of when we're born. And certainly this generation, technology has been a huge factor in shaping their behavior, attitudes, and their outlook towards employers. So that's what we're really going to try and nail today from our speaker. So hopefully we're going to solve some of your problems today, give you some insights into how this generation tick, and hopefully this will help with your campaigns for 2024. So we're going to kick off in a second with Josephine Hanson from Savanta. And then we're going to have a Q&A. This has always been a part of our webinars to give attendees the opportunity to ask any questions. So we'll leave around 20 minutes at the end to go through some of your questions. Now, when you registered, you have the opportunity to put in your questions. So we're not going to get through 100 questions, but we'll do as many as possible. There have been some common themes with your questions. So we've gone through them and we're going to pick those out at the end. We'll finish at 2 o'clock, and then this will also be recorded, by the way. So you'll be able to listen back either on YouTube or on our new podcast. So if you do need to duck out, there will be the opportunity to listen back to this recording. So our speaker, I've known Josephine for a while now. She's spoken many times on our Fresh Insights series. For good reason. She knows her stuff. She's been involved with this audience for many years, previously with the organisation Youth Sight, which are one of the leaders in youth research. They have a huge student panel, and you know, anything that they produce always gets my attention. So we're delighted to have Josephine here again today to give us her update on the way this age group, 18 to 24, Gen Z, generally are behaving and what they're thinking about when they're starting to look for employers. It's going to be extremely useful. So Josephine's spoken at various other events. I often bump into her at the Youth Marketing Conference, which takes place in London every year. We've been sponsors, as have Youth Sight over the years, and it's a pleasure to bring Josephine back to the stage once more. So I'm going to hand over to Josephine. I'm going to stop sharing my screen. All being well, this will be a smooth transition. Over to you, Josephine.
Brilliant. Thanks, Dan. That was a really nice introduction. And yeah, casting my mind back to all the times we've bumped into each other at different conferences. Pre and post pandemic. What I'll do now is share my screen. So that will be helpful for me to then be able to take you through. So great. I've decided just to go really dramatic with this presentation and call it Three Workplace Revolutions Happening Right Now. And I guess you probably know what these workplace revolutions are. You guys work in recruitment all the time, but I guess the point of me coming today and talking about them is because I head up the youth practice at Savanta. We focus on teens and 20-somethings, so their journey into adulthood, what they think, what they feel, what they do, and how that can be harnessed to improve the way that brands connect with that generation. So I might be talking about things you already know, I'm sure you do, but what I'm going to be doing is laying on my interpretation of how I see it as a youth researcher with my sort of 10 plus years of looking at, originally it was millennials, they're now too old, and we mostly look at Gen Z, to really have, I guess, a bit of a conversation at the end about these three revolutions, because I feel that we're not in the same place, which is not a bad thing. It means that we're considering our options, but it's all change for Gen Z. So let's see. As Dan said, I now work for Savanta. So I used to be the managing director of YouthSight Research. We had a we still do have a huge panel, but we were bought by Savanta. So instead of being the managing director there, it's a huge organization. I'm there, a VP and head of the youth practice. So what we offer now to our clients is quite unique insofar as Savanta has lots of different client teams. So those teams really understand their clients' business really well. And what I bring to the table is an understanding of the audience. In the past, clients would have to decide, do I want an agency that really knows Gen Z or young people, or do I want an agency that really understands what we do as a business? And it's always kind of been that way up until now. So now that we've joined Savanta, we're offering this joined up solution, which is great for clients, but also great for us because it means that we're able to deliver better insights, better recommendations to our clients going forward. And a lot of the data I'm going to be sharing with you today, well, it'll be from all over the place because, you know, there's no point sticking to one data source. We want to get a full rounded picture. But a lot of the data I'll be sharing from Savanta comes from our State of the Youth Nation product. So this is our UK youth tracker. It focuses on 16 to 24s. It's been going since 2015. So that's 8 years of trend data, which is so useful. And I've got a couple of really insightful trend lines to show you because it shows the power of, if you were to ask a question at one moment in time, it wouldn't necessarily have much impact. But being able to look back 8 years, you can see things going up or indeed going down incrementally, which is giving you a real sense of where we're going and what to prepare for. So I'll be sharing the data and a lot of TikToks as well, just as an FYI, as a youth researcher, couldn't help myself but include some of those in this presentation. So watch out for those. And let's start talking about the revolutions. Yeah, there we go. So this slide kind of made me laugh when I was putting it together because I'm going to be talking about three revolutions and it really doesn't look revolutionary in any way, shape or form. So I guess maybe I didn't want to shock you with my first slide. These are the three revolutions that I'm going to be talking about. As I said, you probably know most of them. The first we're going to talk about is, I've called it the exchange. And for me, this is probably the most interesting one, as it's kind of quite philosophical, I guess. We'll then talk about the technological revolution. And this is about the role of AI in our everyday work. And then finally, we'll talk about workplace revolution and what Gen Z want. And I think that's definitely probably the most debated topic at the moment. I think I'm going to take 20 minutes. I don't know. I haven't done it all the way through, but I'm 100% sure there'll be time at the end to be able to talk through things. So I'm looking forward to speaking to you then. So here we go. Onto a more revolutionary slide. And this is kind of hopefully getting you in the mood for what we're going to talk about. So I just wanted to pause before we got into the three revolutions to sort of make the statement that Gen Z is a change maker generation. They're not afraid of saying what they think, and they're not afraid of asking for change when things aren't as they expected. So I guess think back to the school strikes before the pandemic. You know, young people were purposefully missing school so that they could try and influence government. Black Lives Matter through the pandemic, that's where young people were mobilizing online and taking to the streets. And I guess this generation is really known for cancel culture. And that's where young people are not afraid to call out brands or celebrities for their behavior. So I guess these examples are representative of Gen Z, but they are not necessarily representative of everyone in the generation. And Dan mentioned that earlier. But it's worthwhile bearing that in mind when we talk about some of these general trends, that this is going on in the background. This is the general perception of the generation, which in turn allows young people or gives them permission to be able to be that challenger generation going forward. So, number one, the first revolution from the challenger generation. So this is called the exchange revolution. And this is, I guess, what work is all about, sort of what we do, how it's part of our lives, more generally, how we feel about work. And Gen Z are challenging the established norms about what it should be, and they're rewriting the rules. And I often speak to my clients about Gen Z rewriting the rules, and it's not just in the world of work. I guess other generations arguably did also try and kind of rewrite the rules for what was right for them. But I'm going to try and make it clear throughout this presentation how Gen Z are doing it quite differently to other generations, say millennials, which is obviously the most recent generation to compare to. So I'm going to start each chapter by going through some trends, which I think you should know, but these are their priorities, and kind of giving my take on some of these as a Gen Z researcher. So mental health support. So of course, we all know that Gen Z are more likely to prioritise mental health than other generations, and that's no bad thing. They're wanting their employers to offer mental health resources like counselling or duvet days or meditation classes even. But although we sort of generally focus on mental health conversations and Gen Z, it's actually true that 64% of employees, so across the board, don't have the time or the energy to do their job. And if you can imagine that, or even if you can visualize yourself in that statistic, that does take a toll if you're never feeling like you've done it, you've completed it, that you're good enough. And not only does that take a toll on your mental health, but it also sort of impacts your ability to take part and participate in maybe more strategic or innovative thinking. So we talk about mental health and make that feel quite a personal issue, but it does have a huge impact on organisations and the ability to progress, which is really important to Gen Z. We talk about diversity and inclusion. So yes, Gen Z have grown up with the internet. They're said to be the most diverse generation ever. But what I try to encourage my clients to kind of take away from this point when they think about Gen Z with diversity and inclusion is that Gen Z are the most empathetic generation ever. And that's because they know people across the globe already, and they may only be in their early teens. They are able to focus on the similarities between people much more than any other generation, rather than the differences, which is maybe how other generations learnt about the rest of the world. And I guess as a result of that, Gen Z want to work for companies that reflect their views. They want employers to commit to diversity and inclusion. And they want to work for companies that have a strong track record of promoting people from all backgrounds. According to a recent study, 42% of Gen Z say that they wouldn't take a job if the company's values didn't align with their own personal values. So it's not a nice to have. And, I'm sure you can fill a role without having to have your company's values aligned with your employees. But I just would say, think about the talent you're missing out on in that 42% who are not even considering you because of those issues. Sustainability. Oh gosh, Gen Z have climate anxiety. They don't want to work for companies that are not considering the climate. They want to companies to commit to sustainability. And they want companies to be thinking about their carbon footprint and environmentally friendly methods. According to our State of the Youth Nation data, concern about climate change remained the top concern for young people throughout the pandemic. So COVID-19 did not become the most important issue for young people during the pandemic, even then, it was always climate change. Interestingly, though, last summer, that's when it changed to the cost of living crisis. So that just puts that into perspective, how important cost of living, which I guess in this forum is about remuneration, pay, salary. That's how important it is for young people at the moment. And I guess this isn't just about employer brands that young people care about. So here we've got 93% of Gen Z want employers to give them opportunities to be able to drive positive environmental or social change. So things like corporate volunteer, they don't just want the organisation they work for to be making a positive contribution, but they want their employer to help them be part of the solution as well. And finally, purpose-driven work. So purpose-driven brands has been around for years and years and years. This is about purpose-driven work. And it probably shouldn't come as a surprise that young people want to feel good about the work that they're doing. So I guess Gen Z are drawn to companies that have a strong social mission. They're wanting to make the world a better place, but this doesn't necessarily mean that organisations need to become social enterprises in order to attract Gen Z. But I guess businesses need to reflect on what they stand for, which I know does sound hard to begin with, but it can easily be found at the heart of a business. So an example would be your company may not be saving the world, but you might be providing a better solution than others. So therefore, you are improving the options available. Or your company might be quite niche, which in turn means that you care about that niche and you want to do good in that niche. So it sounds quite hard to identify these things, but if you break it down, most companies are trying to do something good, and it's always better to find something authentic that you are doing already rather than trying to create something new. So as I said, I think you knew all of those. I'm probably preaching to the converted, but let's now cast our mind back to last year and remind ourselves of the workplace trend that was just everywhere. Everyone was talking about it, quiet quitting. So here is a TikTok as promised.
Have a seat, Veronica. Okay, did you tell everyone in the office about quiet quitting?
I did, yeah. Mm-hmm. I did do that, yeah.
Okay, do you know what that means?
Yeah, it means that you just come to work, you do your job, and then you go home. You should try it sometime.
Okay, well, this is creating an unhealthy mindset for our employees.
But don't you think that telling your employees to go above and beyond for a company that pays them a salary that they can barely live off of, don't you think that's unhealthy?
Veronica, please stop. You need to stop.
Deborah, come here.
What's up?
Did you get any bonuses or a promotion for going above and beyond?
I have not. I'm still waiting patiently.
Oh, the poor thing. She's been going above and beyond for years and has nothing to show for it. So why would I?
Okay, well, if you keep talking about this with other employees, we're going to have to take corrective action.
Corrective action for what, Susan? You're so silly. I come here, I do my job, I do a good job, and then I go home and I pay my bills. Anyways, if you want to pay me more, then maybe I'll go above and beyond for that. Okay. All right. Thank you, Susan. Bye.
So that was about the first of many TikToks I'll be showing you today. But it's also worth mentioning that TikTok is a really popular source of information for Gen Z when they are looking for work, for career advice and aspirations. And these are the sort of things that they will see. But I guess when working with a client, I always try and sort of check TikTok. This is more of a little hint for you guys. What is actually being said about them on TikTok before we get into the nitty-gritty, which I guess might be useful for your employer brand. But anyway, back to quiet quitting. And I guess I just wanted to pause and say that I feel that it's got quite a bad reputation. And it's just because of the name, I guess. it's not about quitting, from my interpretation. It's about delivering your work, the work that's in your contract that you need to be doing, and asking that if you do anything over and above, that it's recognised by your employer. However, that's not how it's been covered in the media, and that's not how it is online. But I guess when you put it like that, a little less controversially, it does seem honest and fair. However, I guess it's not the conversation that many of us have had with our employers and bosses over the years. Let's move on to 2023. So this year's latest trend on TikTok. This is lazy girl jobs. This is the person that invented the term.
It's called lazy girl jobs, not because we're being lazy. It's an anti-hustle dig. Back in the day, you would be the first one into the office and the last one to leave. This is basically saying true work-life balance, like all the stuff that I talk about here, working smarter, not harder, saying yes to that learning opportunity because we know it's not just a learning opportunity that would give us a raise. It usually doesn't happen like that, right? They're just getting a discount on labor. Everything that I'm talking about here is considered lazy if you compare it to the toxic corporate workplace expectations. This criticism is just exhausting. And honestly, the term lazy was put in there for marketing. And we're doing a pretty good job. I don't know if you've Googled lazy girl jobs recently. I don't know if you've seen the news, but there's a lot of traction in it, right? Because the whole point of this is to get this message across to as many people so that we can actually go live our lives and be amazing humans. So I think I'm doing okay. I'm gonna keep it. I'm gonna keep the word. Also, I get this question from everyone. I also get this question from journalists. I get this question all around the room. So this is just for you right here so everyone can stop asking, is this just for girls? No, but God forbid, a woman talks about her feminine experience to give other women career and financial advice. Only 70% of my audience demographics on this account and on Anti-Work Girl Bosses is female. So there's other genders listening and partaking in this, or at least an ally. This whole idea that lazy girl jobs is considered misinformation, it's not, because I created the word. So what? Here's something that you can do if you don't want to be stupid. Scott Fitzgerald famously wrote, the quote's behind the camera, so give me 1 second to read it. The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposing ideas in the mind at the same time and still remain the ability to function. You want to sit there and get triggered by some term that I'm using and not understand that there could be other contradictory truths about that. You can be stupid if you would like to be. Or you can listen and use your critical thinking skills and hang out over here because we're actually talking about a lot of fun stuff. This is a very weird job. Imagine if you were doing something at your job and then tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people could just comment on what you're doing and just criticize it. That's what's going on here. It's a weird job, but I love it though.
So yeah, went a little bit off piece at the end, I have to say, but that's the person that has invented this lazy girl job phrase. And it does feel, I guess, a little bit of a blend between TikTok craze and activism. I don't know if you sort of thought that at the beginning, thought it went all a bit weird. But lazy girl jobs are kind of flexible, remote positions that are not necessarily technically taxing, they're relatively high paying, they may not require your kind of complete 100% effort, I guess. The examples that are given online, which these are online, so I have not come up with these, but customer success manager, marketing associate or public relations coordinator, receptionist, virtual assistant, graphic designer, freelance writer, social media manager. So these are the jobs that are being touted as the ones you should go for, where you'll be paid enough to live on, but you'd also not sell yourself, to use a real kind of Gen X phrase there, putting my age out there. Anyway, so I guess this is what Fast Company had to say about these trends. So on the surface, the terms may convey a lack of ambition or effort, but don't let that fool you. Ultimately, social media users are describing healthy jobs with boundaries, reasonable hours, and comfortable salaries. And leaders who ignore this trend and what workers actually want do so at their own risk. So that's an opinion on these TikTok trends. They could either be throwaway or, ignore them at your own risk. So let's look at a little bit of data here, as I said, and some exciting trend lines, or at least they are to me, because I love data, so apologies for that. So this trend line goes back to 2015, And it's about the percentage of 16 to 24 year olds in the UK that say that they agree that I expect to have to work very long hours to be able to progress in my career. As you can see, that has been in long-term decline since 2015. So it was 65% back in the day. It's now just tipped under 50% of young people who think that they need to work those long hours to get ahead. And I guess this suggests that quiet quitting or the lazy girl job trend hasn't come out of nowhere. This line was in decline before the pandemic, before we were working at home. So I guess young people's expectations have been going this way for quite a long time. And the second one, I love this one. This is about work-life balance. So the percentage of young people who agree that in a job, work-life balance is more important to me than earning lots of money. And as you see, there's little movement in the green line, which is an agreement that young people want work-life balance over lots of money. I guess you could argue that maybe we all started off here, I don't know, when we were 16 to 24, don't know, and we just joined the workplace and forgot. But it just shows you that this hasn't changed since 2017. Young people are consistently looking for the balance. Rather than the salary. The salary is to be able to live a fair life rather than be super rich. And finally, in this section, I'm going to show you one more TikTok. So this is Stephen Bartlett. So he's a young entrepreneur. He's on Dragon's Den now. And he has a hugely popular podcast called Diary of a CEO. And this is a clip of him reflecting on a conversation that he had on his podcast with Simon Sinek.
I sat with Simon Sinek 2 weeks ago, and one of the things I really took away from that is we lead with an assumption that all of our team members want something from work that we would want from work. So we believe that our team members want to work, you know, 15 hours a day, and they want to achieve these big goals, and they all want to become millionaires, and that's just fundamentally not the case. Mm-hmm. And that is okay. Some of our team members want to have multiple jobs. Some of them want to pursue their web design business on the side and go and dance in Peru for a couple of months on the side. And you'll end up losing great people because you lead with an assumption that we're all the same and we all want the same thing. Mm-hmm. Have we ever paused for a second to ask each member of our team what they actually want from their job and what they want from work? And if we did, would we do a better job of retention, engagement, and ultimately serving our company and mission in a more effective way? And that's something I've been thinking a lot about since I chatted to Simon, which was, have I turned to all of my team members and really asked them what they want from work? Or do I just assume they want the same as me? And it goes back to my point about subjective success. Success is something, but if you've walked a different path in life, success for you is something entirely different. And if I don't take a second to listen and understand, then I can't create a solution that gets the best out of you. I hope we're having these conversations more about the employee-employer relationship and thinking about how we can craft a more bespoke experience to satisfy both sides.
There we go. I'm going to leave this section with a provocation. And it's a simple question, really. I guess, are we ready to be honest about work? And I think that's a question that Gen Z would like us to come back to and have a chat about. So on to revolution number two. Oh, gosh, I hope we're not getting too tired of revolutions. This is the technological revolution. And, you know, it's the AI revolution. And I guess I've got a term that I discovered while doing the research for this webinar that I think really bridges the last revolution and this one together. And this is something called digital debt. I did not know what this was before. Don't know how many of you knew what it was. But I guess we're all carrying digital debt. So this is like the inflow of data, it's emails, it's meetings, it's notifications. This has all outpaced our human ability to be able to process with it. So I'm sure you all have unread emails, Teams, calendars full of meetings. And if you don't, I'm sure you're quite stressed about keeping it that way. But I guess that pace of work is only intensifying. Everything is feeling important. We spend all of our days dealing with this stuff to try and get out of the red or to get out of the digital debt. And when I heard this or read about this, I felt very seen. I don't know about you, but that was my bridge. Let's talk about some of the trends and my take on it. So in terms of the technology trends, obviously young people love or have to or just do embrace new technology. But they also have expectations that their employers are going to be using it to improve the workplace, to be streamlining processes and provide better work-life balance. I guess for Gen Z, they're very aware of AI. They know that it's going to change their careers and they want to be ahead of the curve. So if they're working for an employer or applying to an employer that isn't using any of this or doing any of this or is ignoring it, that's going to really put them off because they're not going to be upskilled. They're not going to be getting that head start in their career. They're going to be behind in their technological skills because their employer is not taking AI on. Moving on, so technology is enabling side hustles. So yes, they're not young people, not just using technology in their day jobs, they're turning to it to earn more money. As I mentioned earlier, the cost of living crisis is now young people's number one issue. According to Bank of America, 75% of Gen Z are taking steps to increase their income. So whether that's turning their passion into a source of income, so that's 31%, taking a second job, 26%, or just deciding to take a job they don't like, which happens, obviously, but it may be increasing. So I guess the cost of living crisis is sort of impacting those starting their careers. Inflation isn't matching kind of the pay and salaries that are being offered or increased. So I guess this is just an additional incentive for Gen Z to get involved in AI. Give opportunities to take on new challenges. So Gen Z are ambitious, they want to take on new challenges. And if you can give them these opportunities to develop and grow, they will take that and run from you because they see learning as a lifelong activity rather than something, oh, I've learned how to do that. I don't need to do any more learning now. I just get on with my job. So I guess looking to the future, instead of having a kind of fixed job remit, another term that I have discovered with this webinar is something called a butterfly career. You guys all know about this, I'm sure, which apparently is more adaptable. So this is where employers take on, I guess, maybe a work sprint and develop new skills for the team without having to necessarily change a role. I guess it allows employers to keep young people within the organization, keep talent in-house, and just develop the skills of that person based on what their ambitions are, which to said to me, I get that maybe this butterfly career is a bit like a portfolio career, but for younger people. I don't know. This is, yeah, you can tell me later what you think. Anyway, set clear expectations and goals. So making sure that Gen Z know what's expected of them is really important, especially because of AI. For young people, routes to progression, so you know this, really important because graduates have only been in education where their route to progression is very clear cut. They know what they have to do to get there. It becomes all hazy once you get into the workplace, but their expectation and their delight would be for you to make that clear once they do end up in the workplace. But, and I guess young people also want to find a way to communicate, I guess, how they can contribute to the success of the company. And this is beyond the hitting their personal objectives, beyond financial numbers. I think they want to know about bigger strategy and how their little bit kind of ladders up. And why is that important? Well, right now it's important because AI will increase efficiency. But efficiency will be really related to tasks and task delivery. And that is something that will not be so human in the near future. And so therefore, Gen Z want to go beyond those tasks that they are going to oversee and improve and polish and know how it's all going to ladder up and work for the company. So here are some more stats, as promised. So this is not necessarily from State of the Youth Nation. This is our youth omnibus. So this is where clients can put maybe one or two questions to 1,200 young people and just pay per question just to get something back. So we've been asking about AI over the last four months. On the left, you can see there that 74%, so three quarters of Gen Z, say that they know and understand AI. That was last month. So they're feeling quite confident. In the middle, you can see the percentage that say that they are worried about the future of job opportunities because of AI. And this is only going back 4 months. This is from May to August this year. So that just tells you how young people are thinking about it. How will it complement their future career, or what do they need to do to get ahead of the game? And then finally, on the right, you can see that 50%, half of young people, say that they have already personally benefited from AI. And I've got another TikTok of a young person talking about how AI can help them in their job search.
This is the biggest job search hack of all time.
Go to ChatGPT and enter in the job that you want to apply for. Then you're going to enter in this prompt. Based on the job description I sent to you previously, what prompts can I ask you to help better gather my most relevant experience for this job? ChatGPT will now provide you with a series of questions that your target hiring manager wants to see answers for, both on your resume and in the job interview. Now, this is where the magic starts to happen. You have supplied me with 8 prompts. I now want you to answer each of those prompts for me, but I want you to answer them using my most relevant experience from my resume. I will now supply you with my resume. Do you understand what I want here?
Yes.
So the next prompt, below you will find my resume. I want you to use my most relevant experience from my resume to answer the 8 prompts you have provided to me earlier. Here is my resume. Now copy your resume and bang it in. ChatGPT will now identify your most relevant experience for your target role and use it to answer the questions you are most likely to be asked in your job interview. So use this information to update and improve your current resume and also as your answer script for your upcoming job interview. And if ChatGPT stops typing, just enter in continue and it will do its thing.
There you go. So I guess I'll leave you with another point of reflection here. And I guess it's, will we be satisfied with efficiency? AI is going to be throwing up a lot of conversations. You know, will the time saved by AI mean that we can now have a 4-day week? Or are we expected to be doing additional things with that time? What skills are going to be needed by humans to optimize the work done by AI? Is it critical thinking? Is it empathy? I often talk to my clients about AI and say that being a human is actually going to be the superpower of the future. So that's something to bear in mind. And something I assume we don't want to happen is we don't want to see people using AI in their work and developing their own AI strategies, but not sharing them with others because it's giving them the competitive advantage. We want people to be able to benefit from all of this. So I guess that's just another thing to be thinking about. We're in the home stretch now. Okay, so this is revolution number 3, which is the workplace revolution. So this is a hard one. There's no consensus, and it's definitely where the generations are split out, I would say. Pre-pandemic, we all went to the office. During the pandemic, we worked at home. And of course, what will the future be now is the question. We've heard from Stephen Bartlett talk about his conversation with Simon Sinek. Let's hear from Simon Sinek himself now talk about the work from home or work where to work situation.
So this is one of the most common questions I'm getting, which is people still don't know what work is going to look like in the future. And by the way, nobody knows. And anybody who's making any grand prediction of what it's going to be like, they don't know either. The only thing that we do know that I think I can confidently say is here to stay is flexibility is here to stay. For example, we used to have to ask permission to work from home next Thursday because my kid's going to be home. Now we can simply send an email in the morning going, hey, I'm working from home today. you know, and everybody will be fine with it. We got used to that. But in terms of what hybrid work looks like or how we get people to come back to work if they don't want to come back, that is still a big unknown. The dust is still in the sky. I think, unfortunately, for employers, 2023 is still going to have a little bit of uncertainty, and we're going to just have to fumble through it for probably another year.
And yes, I think we have fumbled through it, if I have to reflect on the year to date. I don't know about your organisation, but we're still figuring it out at Savanta. How many desks do we need to offer? Do we need a rota? How do we encourage people back? Do we have a mandate? But you don't want to have a mandate because having a mandate gets you in the news. It's big decisions all round. So let's look at some of these trends. So as Simon said, sort of hybrid work, that flexibility. And Gen Z are more likely to prefer hybrid work arrangements. It allows them to sort of have home days, office days, give them that kind of flexibility and balance of their work, home lives. And if you remember earlier, we were talking about work-life balance, mental health. And I guess looking bigger picture, of course, Gen Z would want that. In other areas of their lives, you will see that they don't want to be penned in. You know, they like to be fluid. They want to be comfortable to do what's right for them. Thinking about things like gender, sexuality, it makes sense that Gen Z are not going to go one side or the other going forward if you just look beyond, into their wider world. Empowerment. So, yes, Gen Z want to be empowered and to have new challenges and make decisions, obviously within reason. In an employer, they're new in the company, but they are looking for employers that are able to give them that opportunity to grow and develop their skills. So here we've got 38% of employees, only 38% of employees feel proud of their work. Why is that? How can we increase that number? I guess being proud of where you work is a really good indicator of how things are going. And it's important, I guess, as it says underneath, because employees who do feel good about work, they're 6 times more likely to recommend their workplace to others, which in a graduate recruitment world is really important. And they're twice as likely to stay longer. Again, specifically in graduate recruitment, makes that initial kind of investment work for you. I guess be supportive and provide regular feedback. Oh, this links to the last trend. Gen Z want a supportive and encouraging work environment. They want a mentor to be there to help them when they need it and to celebrate their success. They're eager to learn, as I've just said, and feedback is really important, but only 25% of employees kind of get regular feedback. They say they rarely or never receive praise from their colleagues. That's really low. And I think this is something that has fallen through the cracks, or as we're trying to figure out this hybrid world, this is where work needs to be done. It seems like the system's broken at the moment. And I'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. And then finally, it's that work-life balance. I've hinted at it throughout. And, you know, as our data said earlier, around 80% of 16 to 24s would prefer that work-life balance over a huge paycheck. They want to have a life outside work. So flexible hours, generous time off, these are things you know that you're probably offering. I think 83% of Gen Z would prefer sort of a flexi starting time compared to 68%. So 8 out of 10 versus 6 out of 10 older workers. And, you know, there's a desire to be autonomous in their work, but supported where needed, which is quite different. And that's from Deloitte. And here you've got nearly 75%, so 3/4 of managers and business leaders are saying that they find Gen Z employees more difficult to work with than older employees. Again, this is where the intergenerational tension around this issue is playing out, where people have had different experiences that they're rightly or wrongly thinking should be continue in perpetuity while others are trying to do things slightly differently, and whether they should or shouldn't, if it's right or wrong, or if it is a right or wrong question, I don't know. Anyway, so here we go. This is, I guess, my take on this. So according to kind of MBA literature, there are 10 leadership styles. So being a coach, a visionary, a servant, an autocrat, being quite laissez-faire, being democratic, a pacemaker, transformational, transactional, or bureaucratic. Now, I guess these were all set up or created when we were all in the office, where leaders, managers, they were always visible. So I guess the question is, what are the leadership styles now? And I think we're still working to these 10, even though we're in a hybrid environment. Are we pausing to think, what is missing here? What can we add? How can we improve on things instead of what are we losing? You know, there are things that people are doing more practically here, things like the open door policy. You can come and see me with any issue whenever. I'm here, I'm ready to listen. How do you create that when we're in an online or a hybrid environment? How do you, there used to be a thing called managing by walking around. I didn't know it was an official thing, but it is an official thing according to my research. How is that done when everybody's working from their bedroom, especially Gen Z, like working in a shared house and, all the things that come with different environments that they're working in? How do you do that online? And I just don't think, given my prediction that, and Simon Sinek, that flexibility is here to stay, Gen Z are not going to go one side or the other. We need to not be forcing people to do things. We need to be updating our management and leadership styles. And I guess it's because this is maybe our view and experience of the situation happening. So here we go. This is how managers might think Gen Z or grads are in the office.
Where's my dad? I'm all alone. I'm too small to be here on my own.
Because we all had this.
This is how we do it.
And that's great. Some of us had a really great time in the office, and I think people are still having great times in the office, but it has to be different for different generations, and we have to let Gen Z figure out what's right for them. And I'll just leave you with a couple of final stats here. So this is a Deloitte piece of research. It was global, but this is these are the UK numbers. Only 11% of Gen Z in the UK are happy with their current office that they go to. And then this is on the right, like the percentage of millennials and Gen Z likely to look for a new job if they're asked to go to the office full time. So I guess these are, I think they're quite clear signs of how we should be talking to Gen Z about these sorts of things. And if you just layer on top again, the backdrop where 51% of Gen Z, 47% of millennials in the UK say that they feel stressed all or most of the time, and that is higher than other kind of markets, it hopefully will give you an idea of how you can start communicating or continue communicating. So the provocative question here is, what is the role of the office going forward? It's not saying that it shouldn't be there, but what are we trying to promote by getting people to come there? It's often not a quiet workplace. Someone's bedroom is quieter than the office, but there are loads of great things that can happen there. What can we do to make it brilliant rather than replicating the past? So to summarise, very simply, the three revolutions are happening. The exchange revolution, are we ready to have that honest conversation about work? Technological revolution. Will we be satisfied with just efficiency once we have AI as a tool? What are we going to do then? Are we And then the workplace revolution, what is the role of the office? Thank you for listening. My email address is there. The youth practice email address is there as well, if you'd like to kind of talk to my team or my colleagues. And of course, the bit in the middle is sort of saying, if you'd like to work with us, we'd love to work with you. That's the end of my slides. And we have 5 minutes, it seems, for questions. So
back to you, Deb. Lovely. Thank you very much on behalf of all our members for presenting today. I mean, presenting a revolution can be quite a scary concept, but you provided lots of digestible solutions for our members that, you know, are front of mind for a lot of people here today. You know, AI you talked about hybrid working and various other subjects that all come across the desks of our members. And, you know, there's no easy quick fix, but going back to the original purpose of this webinar, that there are generational gaps. There's five generations in the workplace. We're going to rub up against each other, and we need to kind of work it out to get the best out of each other and all get along. So thank you for giving us, in a very short space of time, some useful insights, Josephine. Now, you've actually covered quite a few of the questions that were given to me, namely about how to attract Gen Z, you know, what buttons to press, and various things. So you did talk about those in your slide for each of those revolutions under the trends. So hopefully for about 60% of our audience, at least, you have answered their questions about what buttons to press to attract Gen Z. Of course, there are a few questions about retaining them as well, which is another subject. However, there are a few other questions if we have time for now, Josephine. I'm just going to pick out a few. I mean, we have one from Alan, who's the University Liaison and Emerging Technologies Manager at Leonardo, who was wondering how important it is flexible working for new recruits. I mean, you did answer that right at the end, saying I think it was 77% would leave if they had to work full time in the office, that is. No one wants to work 5 days in the office. No one wants to work 5 days at home. I guess that's, and you alluded to the fact there that other people are in agreement that flexibility is here to stay. So I think
the approach though, if I can just interject there, the big picture is flexibility is wanted and required, but I guess the way you talk about it and the way you deliver it is part of how you can make it feel more Gen Z. So I think Gen Z want to be open and honest about the things that they're doing when they need flexibility. And I think that that's something that's quite different to other generations who would say, I just need some time off, or I just can't come in this morning. Or I think Gen Z want work to know what's going on with them, and there is not this big gulf. So I think that is the way to position the flexibility. We know you've got stuff that happens, and we want to be able to help you get that done or deal with that, or speak in a human language rather. We allow flexibility. You can put that on your, I don't know, we've got a Bamboo HR app, and you put that on and then I'll approve it. Of course I'll approve it, rather than let's have a conversation about why you're needing the flexibility, and can we be of any help?
Yeah, make it smoother, not a problem. I guess employers need to bear that in mind, because we can all benefit from flexible work life. If we've got families, or if we haven't got families or other commitments outside of work, it's here to stay. Good. Okay. Got another question here from Anita, who's the communications and engagement lead at Rolls-Royce. How have personas or personal characteristics been used to guide this data and the trends you've shared?
So yes, I've been speaking very much at an overall level. I've brought some kind of demographic things out. I do think it is useful. We work with a lot of our clients to help them segment their audiences, because of course not all messages will land equally well with everyone. I guess the way we do that is we help identify those groups via via statistical analysis. And then it's not about creating four or five different approaches. It's about understanding which groups are you going to get the most uptake from, and then focusing your communications that way. So of course you can't completely individualize your message, and again, similarly today, I couldn't completely individualize my data because I wouldn't know how many to share, but I decided to go on a general level so that everyone could take something from it. And similarly, that would be the approach when we do segmentation projects with clients.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it's part of your methodology. I'm sure you can answer those questions in our post-webinar debate on our LinkedIn forum, which I'll refer to in a second. I'm going to squeeze in one more question, then we are going to run out of time, if that's okay. It's a question here from Abby, who's the lead resourcing specialist at Advantage Smolen. How do we keep people engaged long-term throughout their university journey and afterwards? Because we have a lot of members who will engage with students, you know, the minute they set foot at university, maybe they'll take them on for work experience or internships. How do they keep that relationship going so they join when they graduate, I guess, is what Abby's trying to say.
I kind of hinted at it a bit throughout about sort of talking about the bigger ambitions of the organisation, how things ladder up, talking about sort of interesting changes and recognising, I guess, that the people that you spoke to at the beginning as a fresher might be completely different by the time they graduate. So it's keeping in touch and allowing those people to have opportunities to change direction or course, and being able to be with them for that and prove that your organization is one that can stick with them and potentially sort of embody that butterfly career that I was talking about earlier.
Okay. Right, I'm just going to finish off by sharing my screen. And yeah, as I mentioned there, we like all our speakers to jump on the LinkedIn platform, make themselves available and pick up any questions that you may have, because we've run out of time. So Josephine's kindly agreed to do that for you. As I said, we have recorded this, so the beauty of it is you can always listen back either on our YouTube channel or on our podcast. So on your commute, dog walk, run, you'll be able to check in and listen back to any of our Fresh Insights webinars. Fresh Insights is just one of our programme of events throughout the year. Great Debate is the next one coming up on the 11th of October. So a slightly different format where we pick a topic and we have a panel of speakers and really dissect a subject that's really causing a lot of concern for early talent recruiters. So Great Debate, one for your diary on the 11th of October, 1 till 2 p.m. Thank you very much for everyone today coming along. Here's my contact details should you need me, but we're out of time. But again, on behalf of all our members, our attendees today, the team behind organising this and myself, thank you very much, Josephine, for joining us today. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks so much.